Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Today we bring you part two of our discussion on albinism, and you can find part one on of the discussion on our website at voanews.com and look for Health Chat in the radio part of the website. Now, albinism is a congenital disorder characterized by the complete or partial absence of pigment in the skin, hair, and eyes. Our distinguished panel of guests today will help us to better understand the condition, the challenges, and what is being done, particularly in some parts of sub-Saharan Africa. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at healthchat@voanews.com and we will make sure to respond. Now, it is my pleasure to welcome once again back our three guests. First, Dr. Aisha Sethi. She is joining us via phone from New Haven, Connecticut. Dr. Sethi is an associate professor of dermatology at Yale University and director of the Yale Dermatology Global Health Program. Among many things, she has set up a dedicated dermatology elective exchange program with Kamuzu Central Hospital in Lilongwe, Malawi, for medical students and dermatology residents since 2007, and her albinism awareness work in Malawi has been featured by national media in the country several times and has been positively recognized and supported by the Malawian government. Dr. Aisha Sethi, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Leonard.
Great. And also joining us, we are very pleased to have Mr. Jake Epele. He is the CEO and founder of the Albino Foundation of Nigeria. And Mr. Epele is joining us via phone from Abuja. He is also executive director of the Regional Albinism Forum Africa, an umbrella organization of albinism interventions organizations in Africa. In addition, Mr. Epele is a United Nations albinism champion. Jake Epele, welcome to the program. Mr. Jake Epele, are you there? Great, I can hear you now. Thank you so much for joining us. And last but not least, we move to South Africa with Mpo Tiope. He's author, speaker, and activist. Mpo is from a small community in Northern Cape, and the only child with albinism in a family of seven children. He's the author of Life with Albinism Filled with Pearls, about the challenges and victories associated with albinism. He is also director of PEO Consulting, which focuses on motivational talks, also an NGO, All in His Image, which aims on touring South Africa and eventually Africa as a whole, addressing myths, perceptions, killings, and killings associated with albinism. Mpo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, and good evening to our listeners.
Fantastic, and this is as if I had just spoken to you yesterday. It's been 2 weeks, but it's been... It went by very quickly, and I'm very excited that we are able to continue the conversation because there were so many things that we didn't touch on last time. Now, let me start with you, Dr. Aisha Sethi, and I wanted you to react on something that I just mentioned about Mpo. He is the only child in his family who has albinism. Can you explain to us how something like this is possible, given that it is genetically related?
Yes. So did you say he was one of seven siblings?
Yes, I believe one of seven and the only one in his community.
Okay. Yeah, so, genetically, albinism falls into this group of disorders that it's autosomal recessive. So not every child gets it, but both parents do need to be carrying the gene for it and can have children who don't have albinism also. So in conditions like albinism, which are autosomal recessive, in a closed community, even if other people don't have it, but two people marry who are carrying the gene, they can have normal children and they can have children with albinism.
Okay. And Mpo, let me ask you this. As someone who lives with the condition, and last time Dr. Sethi talked about some of the health challenges, and we can touch on it again, but I wanted to get your perspective on some of the health challenges that whether you're concerned with or you have been confronted with?
Some of the challenges, firstly, it's eyesight. Even my parents didn't know much about, because they were not educated, so they didn't know much about albinism. And even my teachers at school, I was the first person with albinism they dealt with. So it was a challenge when I had to take notes from the board. It was a problem because I didn't have glasses and I had to extend my desk closer to the board so that I can be able to write the notes. And at times I didn't even write the notes because of that. And secondly, it's the challenges of the sun. You know, in Africa, generally, the conditions are very extremely hot, and especially in the province I'm from. So it was a challenge because I would play 30 minutes outside with the kids and then with other kids, and then what would happen is that I would have blisters and so forth. So the challenges were, and it affects your self-esteem, because even your perspective about yourself, because I used to be frustrated with myself that others in class are able to take notes and all that, but I can't. And when I play 30 minutes or an hour, and then the next thing I can't even feel the way it's so painful that even water hurts my skin. So that was one of the challenges that one would have, more especially the sight and that. And the third part was the creams one had to use, you know, because if one has to use special creams and then one or our parents don't know, then that is a problem, because you try this, you try that, and your skin would not be better.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes, and Mr. Pele, could you comment on that? Do you see similar challenges with, whether it's yourself or even the other people, the other albinos that you work with? And to what extent is it being addressed?
My brother in South Africa, I am the only person with albinism. I am from a polygamous home. The only child with albinism that born with their own children. And the challenges is pretty much the same across the region. Sight, not being able to effectively use your eyes like every other person. Skin cancer is a major problem. I actually, as I speak, I have some cheese of pigmented of skin cancer if I don't put it in the board. You have skin cancer, which is a major problem. And what we've done in Nigeria is engage the government of Nigeria. We've been able to hide a free skin cancer treatment program. To got for that boost. Yes. And of course, the sunburn. And of course, you know, Nigeria has a larger population, most populous country in the continent. So we have a lot of persons with albinism than any country I can think of.
Yes.
One of the reasons why we went into a baseline survey just to mine the numbers of persons in the related numbers, so we should be able to tell what type of organism, what are the challenges, what are the stigmatization issues and stereotypes, and all of that. So it's pretty much the same across
yes.
the challenges are virtually the same.
Similar challenges.
Across the region.
Dr. Sethi, let me ask you this, because when we talk specifically about the issue of skin cancer, one of the advice that is being given to people to protect themselves is to use sunscreen. Now, the reality is, I mean, I'm from Africa as well, and I know yes. sunscreen is not part of your daily conversation,
yes.
you know, whether you have albinism or not. Maybe for the albino community, it is more part of the conversation, but I'm not even so sure. So tell us how to approach this issue with sunscreen, access to sunscreen for the albino population.
That's a great question, Leonard. So you're right, actually, even outside of Africa, from the countries I've been to, even here in North America, a lot of our patients who have darker skin think they don't need sunscreen or sunblock. So that's the first educational point, that all skin type pigmentation, everybody needs sunblock to prevent skin cancer. It is more common if pigment is missing or if one has more fair skin, or what we call type 1 skin. It's also a matter of availability in most countries in Africa, that sunblock and sunscreen is not readily available commercially. It is something that is hard to get in regular stores, and if you do get it, it most of the time it's imported. So it's educating the people we are seeing, especially those patients with albinism. And the third thing is that it's really expensive to get it if it is available. So there's a question of culture, conception or misconception of do I need it or not. There's a question of if it's available or not, and the cost of it. So there are things being done to address this, and especially in one location in Tanzania, there's a pharmacist from Spain who actually started producing this local sunblock that's made of zinc oxide, and that's being done in Moshi, Tanzania.
So, Dr. Sethi, if people don't have access to sunscreen, what are some tips that they could perhaps implement to protect themselves? I mean, things like wearing a hat and things. What else can you tell us?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. Yeah, so if there's no sunblock available, just like you said, a wide-brimmed hat, not a baseball cap, so your ears, the back of the neck should be covered. There are some hats you can get with a back flap that covers the neck, long sleeve clothing, long pants, clothing that has a thicker weave so that the UV rays don't go through, and avoiding the sun between what we call peak daylight hours. So that's between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m., you know, because small children will be small children. They'll want to go out and play no matter where they are, Africa, America, or South America. So, you know, I think those are more common sense things that one can do even without sunblock being available.
Okay. Now, Umpo, you wrote the book Life with Albinism Filled with Pearls. Tell us more about this book. The title, I find, is very interesting. And what do you talk about?
In the book, I talk about the journey where, in most cases, what happens is that a parent, if they are expecting and a baby comes with albinism, some parents refuse the kid because he's white, and so they just assume that it must be a white person's child because of the fact that most parents with workers, domestic workers here in Africa. So that I raise that challenge, and I also raise challenges where one starts school. The challenges at school are like bullying and being different at school and overcoming that, because I think most of the time we just talk topics that are just open-ended. We don't know how, or we don't talk about how we deal with that. And then it goes to high school, the challenges at high school and you know, things like the dating system. And because you're different and so forth, and even university, and just overcoming the challenges. Because now most of the time when we talk albinism, we kind of, it's almost the condition is associated with PT and you know, just in a way, yeah, PT.
Yeah.
Now I try and say that even if you have albinism, you can still push at school. Yes, it's difficult, but you can push through that difficulty and you can actually overcome and graduate and
okay,
do business and okay, whatever.
So it's a message of hope. It's a message of hope. And we'll talk more about it. We have to take a short break for the news, and we'll have more on with our special guest today on albinism. Don't go away. We'll be right back. It's now time for the news with Ruth Adesu.
Good evening. Amnesty International says since November 2014, the number of reported crimes against people with albinism in Malawi has risen to 148 cases, including 14 murders and 7 attempted murders. Other human rights abuses, including abductions and robberies against people with albinism, have swept through Malawi. Similar attacks have occurred in neighboring countries such as Mozambique, Tanzania, and South Africa. The organization believes that human rights strategy through human rights education and awareness is needed to address the root causes of crimes against people with albinism and to stop further attacks. An 8-year study has shown the BCG vaccine against tuberculosis can reverse type 1 diabetes to almost undetectable levels. United States researchers found that just one jab, followed by a booster 4 weeks later, brought down average blood sugar levels to nearly normal within 3 years, and the effect lasted for the following 5 years. Used for almost a century to prevent tuberculosis, the team says BCG speeds up the rate by which cells convert glucose into energy. The study involved 52 people with type 1 diabetes. The report was published in the Telegraph, UK. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Lenord, back to you.
Thank you, Ruth, and welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing albinism with my guests, Mr. Jake Epele, CEO and founder of the Albino Foundation in Nigeria, Dr. Aisha Sethi, she's Associate Professor of Dermatology at Yale University here in the United States, and Mpo Tiope, he's a motivational speaker, activist, and author of the book Life with Albinism Filled with Pearls. And quickly, before I go to Mr. Epele, now Mpo, you were talking about your book. Where is it available if someone wants to get it?
Yeah, because I'm self-published, it's actually, I think by this month, it should be available as an e-book. But right now, it's unfortunately only available in South Africa, but I'm making means to make it available to the rest of the world.
Okay.
And,
Okay.
Yeah, I needed to add something. You know, when you asked a question about the availability of the sanctuaries and everything else, just a quick one. It's just that sometimes because I go and speak at communities and schools and everything, some parents would tell me that, look, sometimes I have just enough money to buy food and I don't have money to buy sunscreen. So now it's a question of asking, do I buy food for the rest of the family or I buy the sunscreen? So that one is very important a topic that I go I get whenever I go and speak in all different rural communities.
That's a critical question, Mr. Pele. You, through your organization, I see that recently the Health Ministry of Nigeria, in partnership, they launched the Albinism Healthcare Interventions Memorandum to National Council of Health, jointly sponsored by the Albino Foundation. So what do you intend to do through such a partnership? The issue of sunscreen, which is so basic but not readily available to many people, how do you address that?
There are a few information, a few tips that I want to talk about as regards to sunscreen. Number one, and I'm sure the dermatologist who is with us will confirm this, especially here in Africa, we can put all our hope into sunscreen because sunscreen, surely we want to follow the process of application. You have to apply sunscreen after every 10 minutes. after every 10 minutes, you just have to keep applying sunscreen. I believe in the efficacy of sunscreen. I believe in what it can do. But then, if we put all our some everything in sunscreen, at the end of the day, you discover that we're not able to keep up with the procedure, you know. And in terms of what we're doing, that's the dark sunscreen, we're partnering with the European Union and the Nigerian government. We have just secured sunscreen as one of the national drug requirement list. The implication of that is that it will further drive the price of sunscreen drugs. Because pharmaceutical organizations even to bring that they have much traction. Ability. It can now be prescribed in hospitals, which is a good thing. But then the EU, the European Union, is working with us and we're trying to do what the Tanzanian people have done. Incidentally, the lady is a friend as well. I know her. The lady from Spain. You know, we're trying to also bring her here. She just had a baby, so she can't come until her child is old enough. So, pointedly, working to see if we can have a local production for availability, so that it will be available and affordable. Availability and affordability, you know. We're partnering with government to ensure that government can take that. Now, in terms of what comes from the Health Council, for one, is sustainability, the free skin cancer treatment, and decentralization treatment. Currently, it's done in just one hospital, and you can tell about 180 million people approximately, and approximate figures of persons with nearing 3-4 million. So you can't have all of them go to one hospital. So we decentralized the hospital treatment to include 6 more hospitals across 6 geopolitical zones in Nigeria. So sustainability is there. We've also gotten permits to put us on a budget line. So in 2019, there will be a budget set aside for algorithm intervention. Various ministries that is connected to what we're doing, the education, justice, affairs, health, youth and sports. All of them will have various components of algorithm intervention, and it is budgeted for. Then the foundation can approach them and say, no, I can track the budget from the national budget, but you have $10 in for algorithm. Here's the project. We will supervise you to intervene those things. There's a primary health care fund. It's a primary health care fund. We invited to be part of the primary health care fund. You know, the education, I sat as the chair of the Inclusive Education Policy for Nigeria. Incidentally, that policy has been approved. So there's various development partners who are getting involved in implementation of that policy. And finally, the electoral process. We're also interested in the electoral process. We're partnering with EU.
Okay.
The electoral body in Nigeria, a platform to include us in the electoral process. I am 57. I've never voted before. But currently, going to have to vote because of the level of advocacy carried out in the country. And it's not only for persons with albinism, it's for persons with disability.
Yes, Mr. Pele, and this is, I mean, when you talked about even electoral being included in the electoral process, that's really, it's really mind-boggling to think that because there is a certain condition, is it you cannot be involved in the process? And it also speaks of the fact that disability in general has to be addressed when, in terms of including people in all parts of all aspects of society and development. So it is a good point that you're touching on. And I wanted to come to you, Dr. Sethi, because and stay a little bit on the issue of on one of the solutions that we talked about, which is the sunscreen. And if you feel free to react to Mr. Pele's comment about the practicality, the fact that you have to apply every 10 minutes. Is there a specific type of sunscreen that is more suitable to albinos? Because I know there are sunscreens that are SPF 15, 10, 25. Sometimes people want to do some donation, but they may not even know the right one to give. And what do you suggest?
Yeah, I think, the first thing I would say is that just the difference between sunscreen and sunblock. So those are two important distinctions. Sunscreens are chemical absorbers of UV light, and sunblocks are physical reflectors of UV light. I think what's more suitable and what is being produced right now locally in Tanzania is sunblock. And that's zinc oxide. That's cheaper, and it actually stays on longer on the skin. And you have to reapply it every 2 hours, actually. And sunblock is something that can be locally produced. It has been done in Tanzania, and it's called Kili Sun, and it's being done at the Regional Dermatology Training Center in Moshi, Tanzania. So that's one thing about the local production. I think definitely, that's where the education part comes in, about how often does it need to be applied, which area does it need to be applied. And I think what you asked me earlier about the long sleeve clothing, the hats, that just with the exposed surfaces like the head, neck, ears, the hands and the feet being covered with sunblock, that should suffice actually. So it's not every 10 minutes, so it's every 2 hours. And okay. I think sunblock is more preferable than sunblock. Yeah, thank you,
Leonard. Okay, and Paul, now let me ask you this. I know we didn't touch on anything regarding the stigma and everything, but we did in part one. We spoke extensively on this, and I invite our listeners to go to part one because we really want to be able to broaden our discussion. Unfortunately, time is going to run very quickly, but I wanted to ask you, as a young person who lives with this condition, what do you hope to see, whether it's medically or with regards to the way society approaches albinism?
So for me, I think I have one, and I've noticed firstly that every country deals with albinism differently, and for me that's a challenge because I touched on the basis that. I'll make an example. It happened in Tanzania, and everybody else was like, okay, that's happening far. And now it went to Malawi and then Mozambique and South Africa. Now, we cannot work alone, every country working on its own. There needs to be a sync. Like, I need to have the doctor's contacts in Nigeria. He needs to have my detail, and then we need to form a way where we can actually not just as a country, but I need to share my skills or whatever ways that it can be duplicated in Nigeria or just a way where we can fight in Africa as one.
Okay, that, we have to leave it.
Main problem.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Dr. Aisha Sethi, Mr. Jacob Pele, and Potiope. We will have their information on our Facebook page if you want to know who they are or if you want to connect with them. My name is Lenor Mudu in Washington with producer Fatou Kalala and Ruth Adisu with the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after